Well, I've got my own earthquake detector in the studio, and the guys came in and they said, "George, look." And this thing was moving, oscillating, and they said they felt something. I did not, but I am now looking at the earthquake site at the USGS, and we just got hit with a 4.5 magnitude earthquake, which is 28 miles from the Los Angeles Civic Center, 7 miles from Simi Valley in California, and 4 miles from Chatsworth. That's too close for comfort for me. Yep, 4.5. That's the biggest I've been in to date. When I first came here almost 5 years ago, it was a 2.4. And then I had a, what do we have last week? These guys are laughing at me, these California people. We had a, what, a 3.4 last week? And now we're up to a 4.5. They're getting bigger. Guys, they're getting bigger. Have you ever been in an earthquake, Ron?
No, I haven't, but I've
Man.
Had people who've been in that situation. In fact, my thesis advisor had lived in Washington, and he said that it was something that he had, that it's a memorable experience, and they told him where you have to stand in a house and everything like that. So it must be quite
Strength. You know, I
strange.
felt the 3.4 last week. Of course, these guys didn't, and they felt the 4.5. I didn't, except I have this pyramid type thing hanging from the ceiling in our studio here, and it's hanging by a, just literally a metal thread, and this thing was moving back and forth, so they knew something was up with this building.
Right.
Strange.
But think about that, George. You know, what you're talking about is we're getting this information in space. Imagine if we could find out how where this is going to happen and how big this is going to be if we could get information in time.
Exactly. And we had a big one today, 7.5 in Indonesia, and maybe we're along that same line.
Yeah,
Very strange.
perhaps.
Let's take some calls. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
This is Stephen from Los
Hey,
Angeles.
Steve. Did you feel that earthquake, by the way?
I sure did, yeah.
You did. Okay.
You know, I was calling my girlfriend on the other line to make sure she was okay.
Yeah.
So it's an honor to talk to an African American that's on the frontiers of theoretical physics. That's really cool.
Thank you.
My question is, just the fact of going back into the past, you're selecting an alternate history. In the many worlds theory, you're selecting another history,
Right.
correct?
That's exactly right. I mean, the thing is that you've got it. When you go back into the past, essentially you're selecting an alternate history. That alternate history, however, has to be very similar to the history that you left. And that's important because remember that you have to materialize in a device that is very much like the device that you left. So the alternate history is going to be so close that when you arrive, it would seem to you as though you were still in your ordinary history.
Well, when you return, are you returning to your same timeline,
Ah,
your same history, or are you returning to an altered history?
you're returning, you can never go home again.
Aha.
You see, when you try to go to the future, and you will actually only stay in the future in that alternate universe. You won't move into a new alternate universe by going to the future, but you'll be locked into the future of the alternate universe.
So when you return, you might return to a world that you don't really know.
That's right. You will be returning to a world in which it will be the result of the consequences that you initiated by having arrived in their past.
Yeah, great show.
Okay, thank you, Stephen. Appreciate you being part of the program. First time caller line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yes, hello.
Yeah, please go ahead.
I was wondering if you're Ron, if your time machine doesn't work and you know, all that happens. I'm not saying it won't, but what are you going to do about the loss of money and time that you put into it?
That is always, and it's a good question, that is always the risk of experimentation. The thing is that what you have to do is you have to take that risk. You have to do it. And the only way we've ever been able to advance, the human race has ever been able to advance, is by taking those risks. But the point is that it's a calculated risk. And I mean that in a very literal sense. That is to say that my work is not based on, when people talk about theories in physics, this is not just simply some idea you have. You actually have to work out the equations based on all of the laws of physics. So if you were to go to my webpage, you would actually see the technical papers with the technical details that show the consequences of these things. So the thing is that it's a calculated risk, because what I've done is based on the laws of physics, and it says that there is a good chance that what I'm predicting will actually occur. So it's more than just simply a risk. It's a calculated risk, and there's a high probability of it leading to the results that I predict.
Okay. Let's go west of the Rockies. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is Brian from Greenville, Mississippi.
Hey, Brian. Thank you.
What exactly gives you the idea that you believe that you can travel back and forth in time?
Well, once again, I'm not sure whether you heard, you know, earlier in the program, but my work is based on Einstein's theory, which says that you can use matter and energy to influence space and time. In my particular theory, what I've been able to show is that by using a circulating beam of light, and I gave an example earlier, you can create a circulating beam of light by actually bouncing. One example is just by bouncing light off of mirrors. You can actually create a circulating beam by using intersecting laser beams. But the point is that you can create the circulating beam of light. And a circulating beam of light will actually cause the space within that region to become twisted. The analogy that I used earlier in the program was that imagine that you have a cup of coffee in front of you, and the coffee represents empty space, and your spoon represents the circulating beam of light. Now, what happens when you take the spoon and stir the coffee? The coffee swirls around. Well, the circulating light beam will act like that spoon. It will cause empty space to swirl around. And when I was talking in the program earlier, I said you could see the result of that stirring of space. If you use the analogy of the coffee, you could see the coffee moving around. If you put a sugar cube in there, the coffee swirls around and drags the sugar cube around. In the case of space, you can't see the empty space circulating around, but if you put a little subatomic particle called like a neutron into that empty space, you will see the neutron getting swirled around just like the sugar cube. Now, in Einstein's theory, space and time are connected to each other. Whatever you do to space also happens to time. So all of us live along a timeline, a straight timeline that goes from the past to the present to the future. So what this is saying that is that as this vortex in space is being created, it will cause time, this timeline, to get twisted into a loop. And as you move along this loop in time, you will be able to go from the past to the present to the future, but you're on a loop in time. So you're going to be able to go from the future back into the past. So the whole operation of the machine is to use a circulating beam of light to cause a twisting of space. And as the twisting of space becomes strong enough, time will get twisted into a loop. And along that loop in time, you will be able to go back into the past.
What would allow you to set the time frame for the event or the moment you want to go back to or into the future? How will you be able to do that?
The event is actually set by turning on the device itself, because until you turn the device on, it's the circulating light that is initiating the first frame, if you will. It's like turning on your VCR, to use that analogy that you were talking about. It starts recording then, you might say. So once you turn it on, you're beginning to create these loops in time. And as I said, these loops in time are not going back around and around on themselves. They're sort of creating sort of a helix, a spiral. I use this example of this slinking. And as you leave the device on, once again, as I said, for example, if you turn the device on today and leave it on till December, then essentially you might say you're sort of isolating that time frames from now until December. Then someone in December could actually spiral back along those loops and come back to any time in between. They could come back to November, back to October, September, all the way back up to August, but they wouldn't be able to go before August. So that's what sets the time frame, is when you turn the device on. If you leave it on for 100 years, continuously, in fact, you have to do that, then someone 100 years would be able to spiral back down or send information back you know, anywhere along that 100-year line back up to the point when the machine was turned on.
Okay, let's go to our wild card line. You're up with Dr. Ron Mallett on Coast to Coast. Hi there. Hello. Hello. Go ahead.
Hello. Oh, hi. This is Rich.
Caught you in another time zone there, Rich, huh?
Yeah. Oh, okay. I thought it was a... Okay, I'm not here. Well, my question is, well, it's great to be on the show. I was thinking about the principles that he was talking about and of principles of understanding. And he was talking about using the Wright brothers as an example of introducing the idea of flight and then where we've taken it to. And then my question was, is it possible that people can intuitively relate to or understand like these quantum physics principles intuitively and just be able to relate to the ideas without going through these formulas? But also then when, you know, I speak of myself, because when I hear him talking about these principles, I totally think of all the ideas I've always had as a child that I'm just kind of like swimming in this pool of ideas that I can relate to. That I haven't gone to school for physics and all these stuff, and I understand the principles when they're spoken, but I don't know the formula.
Right.
So that was my question.
I understand what your question. You have to realize that, yes, remember that the world operates without having to use formulas. For example, the water doesn't have to calculate, you know, the quantum principles in order to behave like water. You don't have to think about how your brain and body are operating for your brain and body to operate. What science does is to say, all right, these things are happening in nature. Is there a way that I can actually understand them systematically? And if there is, then that can be something that I can utilize. For example, to use the human body, if I can understand things about the human body, then I can utilize that information to try to help the human body when something goes wrong. That's what science does. Science is a systematic way of doing it. So the equation, an electron doesn't need an equation in order to behave. However, if we want to be able to use an electron to give us television or radio, then we do have to develop the equation. So, yes, the universe operates without having to utilize the equations, but we, as intelligent beings in the universe, if we want to utilize that information to try to have nature benefit us, then we do have to know the equations.
Your light will only travel at the speed of light, right?
Right.
You won't be able to make it go faster?
Well, that's interesting. We can actually control the speed of light now. There are, in fact, experiments which are called slow light experiments that have been done in which the speed of light has been slowed down from 186,000 miles per second to like 20 miles per hour. So we can, in fact, control the speed of light. But once again, this is because we understand the nature of light and we understand how to control the way in which light behaves so that we can now do these experiments. We actually can perform what are known as slow light experiments.
Assuming you get funding, Ron, when do you think you can get this really going?
If we could get the initial funding, as I said, the first stage, what we have to actually do is first is to show that the circulating light beam is actually just going to cause this twisting in space, like the analogy with the stirring the coffee. That would take us at least, I would say, about 5 years in the initial expenditure for that would require $250,000, the initial expenditure. Once we're able to do that, and that's going to take a few million more than that, then that would be stage one. If we got the funding 5 years, then we would go on the stage of showing that the twisting in space, and this twisting in space is technically called frame dragging, by the way, because the frame of reference is being pulled around. Once we do that, then we could show that the twisting of space leads to a twisting of time. If we got the funding for that, then that would be another 5 years. So if we got all the funding that we needed, then I think we could show that we could send information, at least, and subatomic particles into the past in about 10 years.
Well, I'll know you succeeded when we have you on the program and I welcome you back again and you say, well, it's been my 10th time.
Very good. And incidentally, George, if I could mention that if people would like to know more about my work, they can go to my webpage at www.physics.ucon, and that's UConn.edu.
In the book, Time Traveler, is it still available to people?
That's right. Time Traveler is still available in bookstores,
And the best way of getting it is Amazon.com. But it's available in bookstores, but Amazon.com still carries it. It's, yes, Time Traveler is available here. And incidentally, it's just been released as The Time Traveler in the UK. Just this past week, the book has been released in the United Kingdom as well. And so it's getting worldwide attention. But, yes, it's available on Amazon.com.
Well, I got to tell you, when you talk about synchronicity, Ron, the waiter at the restaurant I was at was just jumping up and down. And, you know, I was out having dinner with Tommy, my producer. And when I am, I don't really want to talk about show stuff because that's what I'm going to be doing all night. And I did it all day. Just want to have a quick dinner and get out of there. And he was just up and down. And very rarely will I stop and think about the show when other people are wanting to talk about it during a dinner hour. You know, it's my break. But he was so excited about what you do. And I remembered you were on with Art, and I'm trying to remember two and two. Okay, is this the same person? But he said, no, you've got to. He's building a time machine to go back and talk to his father. He wants to. And I said, you know what? It's got to be. I'll check into it. And then a member of we have chat forums all around the country, people who listen to the show, and they're on the Internet talking with each other and having a good time, the NighthawkZone.com people, and fellow by the name of Bad Boy, who heads it up, sent me an instant email outlining all about you, and so I knew exactly where to go on our website. Here you are.
Well, thank you. I mean, for me, it's a pleasure, you know, being here, and to let people know exactly where we are with this and where we're planning on going with this. Incidentally, there's a recent movie that I really have enjoyed, and I can recommend to people about time travel. Especially, I think I liked it because it had an African American in it too. And this was Deja Vu.
That's good. That is with Denzel, right?
Washington.
I love him. He's a great actor.
And they used the whole notion of time travel, and it showed once again the practical consequence of it in a positive way. I mean, because it was used to try to prevent crime. And they also had the limitation. I mean, it was actually done very, very well on a number of different levels. And at one of the interesting ironies in the movie, it's a bit of trivia, but there was a movie which touched me very, very deeply about time travel that came out a few years ago. You probably saw Frequency.
Yes.
And of course, you know, as you probably can see why it touched me, because it was about this this person. He was played a policeman, and his father had passed away many years earlier, and his father had been a ham radio operator, and his father had also been a fireman, and he had died in a fire, and somehow, due to this solar flare phenomena, there was this bending of space and time, and they were able to communicate by ham radio with each other. So the son in the present was able to communicate with his father in the past, and so he had this opportunity of saving his father's life.
And you would go at that route too, wouldn't you?
Oh, absolutely. For me, it's information.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't require me to be there. That's why I'm saying so. What I'm doing is with information.
All right, stay with us, Ron. We're going to come right back with you, and we're going to take final phone calls. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Yeah, nothing worse than watching my producer Tommy dancing to that song. That's almost as bad as an earthquake, to tell you the truth. Our next Coast to Coast program, double guests, John Zaffis. He is a paranormal investigator. He's a demonologist and also paranormal investigator, priest, and exorcist Andrew Calder. They'll be with us talking about, well, guess what? Of course, demonic possession. You know, Ron, earlier we were talking about why haven't we seen time travelers from the future back here, and you were talking and explaining why, that, you know, you had to basically, it ends where the machine started, but if it was running for some years before that, then that's possible. But why don't we have time travelers from the past here?
That would be traveling, well, because of the lack of the technology. See, that is the key.
Ah, okay. Okay, good point. Good point. They would not have been able to have invented the time machine in 1950 or 55 to come.
That's right.
All right, that is a good point. Do you think it's at all possible that there might be time travelers on the planet right now?
If they are, they would be from other planets.
Interesting. Okay. From not our planets, but other planets.
Yes.
Found their way here somehow.
They would have, that would be possible. Because remember, as I said, a civilization that was sufficiently advanced ahead of us could have invented time travel 10,000 years ago. So if they have used their machine and if they have traveled to our planet, then we could have time travelers from other planets.
Are there some scientists, physicists, who simply say time travel is not possible at all?
Well, there has been one who has oscillated back and forth. Now, when you say time travel is not possible, there's the difference. Time travel to the future, I would say that there's no physicist. I think I would be fairly safe in saying there's no physicist who would say that time travel to the future is not possible.
Really? Okay.
Right.
That's pretty dramatic.
Well, once again, because of the fact that we've done it. Remember the basic experiment that I told you that was one of the most dramatic, but the public isn't aware of.
As you know, though we think of time travel as sending people, you are right. It is still time travel.
Exactly. It's still time travel. In fact, I mean, that experiment with the Naval Observatory by sending a clock, atomic clock, on board an ordinary passenger jet.
Yes.
That was time travel into the future. I mean, you know, it was, as I said, it was only fractions of a second into the future, but nevertheless, it was time travel into the future. And it's only a matter of getting the speed up. The faster we go, the more that's going to happen. So time travel into the future has been demonstrated. And as a matter of fact, physicists see it every day when they turn on their particle accelerators because there are subatomic particles that can only live for a very, very short period of time. They completely disintegrate. The electron, for example, lives forever. But there are subatomic particles, like, for instance, one's called a muon, which is a heavy electron. It's a cousin of an electron, about 200 times more massive than the electron. And it only lives for a few millionths of a second and completely disintegrates. But according to Einstein's theory, if you speed it up, its lifetime will actually be extended and it will live longer. And every time they turn on these particle accelerators, for example, in Brookhaven, the linear accelerators, at Stanford, what they find is that these subatomic particles do live longer. Their lifetimes can be extended 16, 18 times more by speeding them up close to the speed of light. And that means these particles are actually traveling into the future. So time travel into the future, we've seen in a laboratory. Where the argument within the community comes about is time travel into the past. Because Einstein's other theory, the general theory of relativity, which has to do with gravity, that's what, you know, my theory is based on, does say that gravity affects time. It can slow it down. But this notion of creating loops in time, which is also based on this theory, we haven't done that in the laboratory yet, but we have developed theories, like, for instance, mine, which shows that circulating light can create these loops in time. The question is that whether or not this will happen, because this will allow us time travel into the past, and that's where the community has different opinions, is will time travel into the past? Now, part of this, I think, is just actually has to do with a scientific form of a prejudice about how the universe should work. In other words, literally, the argument goes like this. Nature would not allow the possibility of time travel into the past because, you know, it's not a good thing. I mean, essentially, that's, you know, nature doesn't want time travel in the past. Now, how do we know what nature wants? So what people have developed, and for instance, one of them is Hawking's chronology protection hypothesis. That's a very sophisticated name for what Hawking said is that nature will behave in such a way that whenever any time machine is activated, it will automatically shut itself down or destroy itself in some way. That's essentially his conjecture. Now, of course, one has to perform the experiment to see whether that's going to be necessarily so. Another speculation is that, well, perhaps the machine won't blow up or shut itself down, but whenever you go back into the past, you can't change the past. That is to say that nature will act in such a way that whatever you do, it will prevent you from actually changing the past. Now, how that will necessarily happen is not particularly clear, but that's another notion. The other is that when you go back into the past and change the past, you do something that we already know has occurred in history. To give you a specific example of that, think of Leonardo da Vinci.
Think of the designs that he had. Now, these designs for these devices he created look surprisingly advanced. I mean, he had something that looked like a prototype for a helicopter.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
Yep.
Now, perhaps there's been speculation that perhaps the time travelers whispered in Leonardo's ear, had traveled back into the past and told Leonardo about these things.
Right.
And that's where it's coming from. So that, in other words, we're already seeing the results of a time traveler having influenced history. So these are all the different speculations about what may happen within the community about, you know, time travel. But once again, physics is basically an experimental science. We have the equations. What we have to do is the experiments. Then we will know whether there's parallel universes, whether the chronology protection is there or whatever. We're going to know once we do the experiment.
Good point. To the phones we go now. We'll wrap up the hour. Let's go, first of all, to our East of the Rockies line. Good morning. You're on the air with us.
Hello, George.
Hi.
Hi, George. This is Sean from Philadelphia.
Hi, Sean.
I have a question for you, gentlemen. I am a combat veteran of the most recent war in Iraq, and I experienced a pretty large explosion that injured my left leg pretty severely. What's weird about this is with the whole time travel thing is I have, whenever I was out cold. I was out for almost 20 minutes with what I was told. I have, in that 20 minutes, I woke up and I was in a field with about, I could say 10,000 to 15,000 other men. And I was in a blue uniform and it had to have been about 1863. And I couldn't tell you for the life of me what could have happened, but I could smell gunpowder. I could smell blood and bodies and all the stuff that I don't want to think about right now. And to this very day, this has been over 3 years ago this happened to me. I still have nightmares, but my nightmares are not of me being in combat. It is me being in combat in that time frame. And I cannot, for the life of me, I cannot figure it out.
You see, Ron, I believe that you can travel in time through the mind or through whatever this wireless internet is in the universe. I don't know if you've done any work in that area.
No, I haven't. I mean, the thing is that the human mind is extremely intriguing. And one of the things that I've been fascinated with is neurophysiology, and it's something that I've tried to follow, you know, because of the fact that I think that by understanding the human mind, we can increase the power of the mind, and that would allow us to do things that are even more fantastic. So, but the problem, the question is, and this is the thing, we don't know all the capabilities of the human mind. So it is possible that there may be a way in which we actually, the mind can link. I mean, it would have to be a physical way. Remember, we would be receiving signals somehow.
Mm-hmm. Could have been a past life. He might have had a past life regression.
Well,
right there.
But the thing is that, but it wouldn't necessarily be. The thing is that signals are out there. Okay, they're out there. Remember, we were talking about the fact that your program is somewhere out there in space.
Yes.
Past programs. Well, the signals are out there. The question is that is the human mind able to somehow tap into these signals so that this gentleman perhaps, you know, is receiving information about something that did happen, somehow his brain was tapping into it. Who knows? That could be a possibility. Once again, what we need to do is to get to a state in both neurophysiology and physics in which we can actually do controlled experiments to see whether or not the mind could be receptive to that.
Good point. Good point. Sean, and by the way, thanks for serving.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Yeah, I have actually one more question. I've had these dreams since it was when I was a very young man. It was when I was probably 7 or 8 years old, and I've always been infatuated with the military, and I finally joined, and I never had the dreams until I was maybe 9 years old. They stopped happening, but I always had these dreams as me being a grown man with a full beard and me running through a field getting shot at and me having to shoot and reload my muzzleloader. And it didn't happen until this one explosion. It was a very large explosion. It was maybe no more than 50 feet away from me, and it knocked me all the way into a wall. And I hit my head pretty hard. They actually split my Kevlar helmet right in the back.
Wow.
And I can't, do you think it's like something that I could have had like a past life and I could have served?
Yeah, that I think that's very possible too, Sean. And I can direct you to someone, Dr. Bruce Goldberg, if you just go to our website, coasttocoastam.com, and on the left, click show info, past guest, Dr. Bruce Goldberg. Send him an email. That may very well also be what happened to you. Let's go to a few more callers before the hour gets us here. I can't believe how fast this is going, Ron. Uh-huh. It is time. Time does go faster, though, doesn't it?
It does.
Especially when you're getting older like us, huh?
Well, I think when you're enjoying yourself, which I am.
Wildcard Line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Yeah, hi, George. My name is Gabe from Summers Point, New Jersey.
Hey, D.
My question for the doctor is, if he builds this device, won't he know immediately if it works? Because won't he wait an hour and send himself a bag of message that says it works?
Well, the thing is that I would know pretty, almost as you put it, immediately. I mean, the thing is that the way in which we would actually do the experiment, I talked about sending particles back in time, but the way in which we will do it initially to see whether or not it works is that I mentioned before about subatomic particles living for, some of them living for a very short period of time. Once we create this loop in time, what we would do is send a beam of these particles by that loop. And if their lifetime changes, that would allow us to know that, in fact, we've created this loop in time. That's the practical way that we would actually begin the experiment. But, yes, you're right. We would know pretty much, you know, when we began the time loop portion of the experiment, whether it worked or not.
I had an expert on reincarnation said that I'm going to end up in the year 3000 as a global talk show host.
Well,
150 million listeners. You never know.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is that, incidentally, your program reaches beyond the U.S. I mean, I've had people who have emailed me from Europe and from the U.K. who have, you know, heard your program.
Yep, we're everywhere. We, you know, we stream and everything. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
This is Wayne. I'm Berwick, PA right now. My question is, what kind of power is going to be required to make this work? Is it going to be something that's going to have to be a large power supply, like, you know, like Back to the Future, you know, it was a nuclear reaction for electricity or something like that? Is it going to be have to be a large power supply, or is it something that's, you know, smaller? And like you said, with track, you know, regulation, you know, like from TimeCop, you know, where they could track it because of the power surge. Is it something like that, or?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. The thing is that for the scale and size of what I'm doing, okay, for example, that causes twisting in space, remember that the scale of this thing is actually going to be on the order of a human hair. So we're talking about a very small region. So the power there is actually going to be very modest to actually cause the twisting of space. To cause the twisting of time, however, is going to cause an increase of power. And in fact, we may require the type of lasers that are being used at places like Los Alamos. There are lasers there which are capable of energies. It's like the power of the sun. In other words, these lasers can create energies on the order of trillions of watts. So the question is that we may have to use lasers that require that kind of power. Yes.
Okay, good. Thank you. Let's go to our next wild card line. You are on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is Mike in Traverse City, Michigan.
Hey, Mike.
I got a question that if I went back in time and did something that altered me or altered the history so that I was never born, wouldn't I just automatically be transported right back to the moment I left?
If
I did succeed in whatever I was doing, when I came back to the present, nobody'd know that that ever happened in the first place, right?
Right. No, the thing is that we were talking about that earlier in the program. It's believed that that's not necessarily what's going to happen. There's another theory. I mean, there's another important aspect of physics called quantum theory, which, as I related before, it underlies everything we understand about the periodic table. It underlies our cell phones and PCs. The thing is that quantum theory says that it's possible that we are only one of a number of parallel universes. So when you go back into the past, you would, in fact,
influence the past, but the past you would influence would be in one of these parallel universes. So no, you wouldn't be influencing the past in the universe that you came from. That would proceed in its normal way. But you would be influencing the past of a parallel universe, and that would lead to different consequences, but not consequences in your original universe.
International Line, where are you calling from?
This is Bob from Vancouver.
Hi, Bob. Go ahead.
Dr. Mallett, I just wanted to tell you I enjoyed reading your memoir.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Especially touched by the love for your father and his inspiration for your interest in physics.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Surely. I have a two-part question. One, this CERN circular accelerator sounds similar to your circulating beam of light. Could time dilation and time reversal be observed during these CERN experiments?
Right. The thing is that...
we have a minute left,
right? Right. Not necessarily. I mean, they're creating circulating energy. And the thing is the circulating energy of the matter that they're creating could potentially, but they're not actually designed to do that. So it's unlikely. But it is similar in the sense that it's circulating matter. In my case, it's circulating light. But as I said, the experiment probably won't because they're not designing it to try to do that.
We won't have time to get a second part of his question in, Ron, but I want to thank you so much for being on the program. You're an absolute delight. It's fun to talk science
thank
with you.
Thank you, George. Well, I've absolutely enjoyed myself.
You know, there are physicists like you, Michio Kaku, who just make it exciting. You really do. And
thank you.
You know what? I want to go back into time, and maybe you'll be one of our teachers.
Thanks, Chad. That's very much of a call. I appreciate that.
All right. You take care of yourself, and good luck in your quest to go back into time and talk to your father.
Thank you very much.
I hope that happens for you.
Thank you.
That's Dr. Ron Mallett, physicist, and what a great guest. Absolute great guest. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasur, Ross Mitchell, Alan Corbett, Stephanie Smith, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition, Demons. Until then, be safe, everyone.